Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where we give you, the investor, an inside view on some of the best and brightest small cap companies operating in the public markets today.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
Today I'm talking to Craig Stanke, CEO of Renaissance Oil, which trades under the symbol ROE on the Toronto Venture Exchange. Renaissance has first mover status in Mexico's energy sector, which has recently transitioned from a government monopoly to collaborating with international oil companies, or IOCs as they are called. Renaissance is intending to become a major Mexican oil producer, targeting the country's untapped shale potential in the Tampico-Mazantla superbasin. Inside that basin, the company's 60,000-acre Amatitlan block is estimated to hold over 6 billion barrels of oil equivalent. That's a lot of oil, folks. But this isn't just about drilling and praying. In Q4 2018, Renaissance reported revenue of $5.9 million. Today we're going to find out about ROE's strategy to become a major oil producer in Mexico. Craig Stanke, welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look.
Thank you.
Craig, can you start out by giving the Equity Guru readers a bird's eye view of Renaissance Oil?
Certainly. Thank you. Yes, Renaissance is a Canadian-listed, Canadian-domiciled oil and gas company that solely focuses on developing hydrocarbons in Mexico.
Yes.
We entered the country right on the heels of reform back in 2014.
Yes.
And so we've been down there for 5 years. We were the most successful company in the first onshore round of December 2015,
yes,
where we acquired our three prioritized producing properties down in the state of Chiapas. And that really got us positioned in the country. And then thereafter, we had been analyzing the Tampico-Mazantla Basin, which you've mentioned previously, for the prospectivity of the unconventionals or the Upper Jurassic shales. And we were very impressed by the data that we acquired as to the prospectivity of these shales. And as a result, we were able to negotiate a deal in our favored block in the Tampico-Mazantla Basin with Luke Oil,
yes,
where February 2017, so just over 2 years ago, we acquired a 25% interest with options to increase our interest with the current partner interests up to 62.5%, and we took over operatorship as well.
Yes.
And that positioned us in the Upper Jurassic Shale play that we're very, very confident we can commercialize, along with Pemex and other players, of course.
Yes. Equity Guru readers are new to oil and gas investment, so I want to get clear on the story, the wealth creation opportunity, without getting too technical. Right now, I want to pull back even wider from your bird's eye view and ask you about the history of Pemex. Who are they? Why is this an important component of your story?
Well, certainly, just to touch on Pemex, as some people may be aware, is the government in Mexico in 1938 nationalized the oil and gas industry, and so therefore Pemex was the only explorer, developer, producer in Mexico up until 2013,
yeah,
the end of 2013. So for almost 80 years, they were the only oil and gas player in Mexico. And just stepping back, Mexico has been endowed with a world-class petroleum system, absolutely,
yeah,
world-class. And for example, there's the Cantarell field offshore in the Gulf of Mexico, which is the,
yeah,
largest oil producer in the world. And, the same play type extends onshore as well. So definitely a premier petroleum system. But and for one company to be able to develop a whole, you know, a world-class petroleum system, it's quite a challenge.
Craig, oil and gas is geopolitically sensitive. On July 1, 2018, Mexico elected a new leftist president, nicknamed AMLO, and he's promised to strengthen Pemex. What's the update on the politics in Mexico?
Definitely, AMLO wants to strengthen Pemex.
Yeah.
His goal is, within his term, his six-year term, to increase production to 2.4 million barrels a day. And you know, subsequent to his inauguration, the national production continues to be on decline to the point where I believe in the April production was 1.68 million barrels a day.
Yeah.
And they have to, the goal is 2.4 million day barrels a day within now, you know, 5.5 years. So it's a tall order, and Pemex does not have the capital or, you know, just the general wherewithal to achieve that lofty goal by itself. That's my opinion. Yeah. And, you know, you've seen as of yesterday, Pemex is now being downgraded by Moody's and S&P to junk bond status. And so their cost of capital has gone way up. And I think that the new administration is now realizing the importance of the of working with IOCs in order to achieve those goals.
Yeah. Last week, a soccer buddy proudly showed off his new electric car. And we hear a lot about green energy, electric vehicles, solar panels, etc. What's your assessment of the demand side of oil, say, for the next 20 years?
I'm all for green energy.
Yeah.
But then you also have to be pragmatic. You know, renewables are for wealthy nations.
Yeah.
You know, the wealthier countries, you know, will continue to subsidize and develop the technologies for renewables.
Yes.
And I think that's the, you know, that's the right direction. But practically speaking, you know, the underdeveloped, lesser developed countries, they don't have the capital to subsidize renewables to any large degree.
Yeah.
And, you know, they want to drive vehicles. They want ambulances to help them when they're sick. They want, you know, the latest medical devices, you know, which are largely, or a good measure of them have been or are supported by petrochemicals, et cetera, et cetera. They want what wealthier countries have, and the base is hydrocarbons.
I couldn't agree with you
more. I think the demand is going to be strong for a lot longer than the renewable pundits suggest that it will be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I find it extremely hypocritical when wealthy Western nations lecture poor countries about oil consumption. We got rich burning oil, so we have to keep that in account.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Craig, can you tell me more about the Tampico-Misantla Superbasin?
Yeah, the Tampico-Misantla Superbasin was qualified as a super, quantified as a superbasin by IHS Markit a couple of years ago, just due to the fact that it's a very, very prolific basin and it's vastly underdeveloped. It has a significant source rock in the Upper Jurassic shales, and you know that's where all the oil and gas emanates from, is the source rock or the shales. But earlier in this interview, we discussed the Cantarell field, the largest offshore field in the world, in the Gulf of Mexico. That is sourced by the Upper Jurassic shales.
Yeah.
Now, the Upper Jurassic shales don't stop at the shores of the Gulf of Mexico. They extend to the west on land, supporting the Tampico-Misantla Basin. So you have a world-class source rock and a vastly underdeveloped onshore basin called the Tampico-Misantla Basin.
Great. Let's talk about your block within it.
Yeah, the Amatitlán land, a 60,000-acre block, is right in the heart of the shale play. Renaissance has assembled a shale team that has had much success They are actually the, you know, the shale team that the technical guys are the technical people who really cracked the code on liberating gas from the shales at the turn of the century in the Barnett Shale. And so they're the right team to come to a new play. We have spent a lot of time and capital analyzing the sweet spots of this Upper Jurassic Shale play, and that drove us to the Matinland block, where we acquired an interest in 2017.
Craig, with gold mining, you'll often hear about a geologist with a massive win on his resume. And sometimes you can't help thinking, well, maybe you just got lucky. You know, staked some land, drilled it, and found a ton of gold. How is an oil and gas technical team different from a gold mining team? I.e., how did your team crack the code?
Back in the 90s, early 90s, George Mitchell of Mitchell Energy had a vision where it could be possible to liberate gas from shales. And again, most of the hydrocarbons are in the shales. That's the kitchen. That's where it's all cooked.
Yeah.
And then, then the oil and gas, leaks off or emanates from the kitchen or the shales into more porous, permeable, let's call it sandstones, but rock anyway, largely sandstones. And that's what we had been producing thus far up until the turn of the century, and producing from the more porous and permeable rock. And basically the shales were viewed as more of a nuisance rock.
Yeah.
But that's where all oil and gas comes from. So George Mitchell had this vision where, if we could get to the kitchen, where the bounty is bigger, where all the oil and gas is, and liberate gas at that time, he was just focusing on gas, liberate gas from the shales. I mean, that would be a world-class supply of hydrocarbons. And it was his vision to liberate gas from the shales, but it was the four key technical guys within Mitchell Energy that were the guys who, they didn't get lucky, they just figured it out.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes, you can do it through Google Play, you can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
Craig, you have a partnership with the Russian oil giant Lukoil, who produce about 1.8 million barrels of oil per day in 42 countries around the world. How did you end up partnering with them, and how does that partnership work?
Yes, well, Lukoil is, you're right, it's a very large oil and gas company, I think one of the top 10 in the world.
Yeah.
They had acquired the Matinland property prior to Renaissance's involvement.
I see.
They came to Mexico largely for the offshore, the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
But this, the Matinland property, got them positioned in the country. They recognized the opportunity in the shales, and that they weren't set up properly within Mexico at that time, to operate the property. And they're not, they're a deep, they're an offshore player largely, and that's why they came to Mexico. And so to put a whole unconventional or shale team together just wasn't part of their business plan at the time. Where simultaneous with them acquiring the Matinland, Renaissance succeeded in round 1.3 in December 2015.
Yeah.
Making it a bona fide operator, a producer operator in Mexico, which is very important. And Matinland needed an operator. On top of that, they recognized our shale expertise. So if you couple the operatorship and the shale expertise together, we were a natural partner for Lukoil to invite in to help develop the Matinland property.
What exactly is Pemex's role in Renaissance Energy. Is the Mexican government an active operator?
Yes, they're active operators, onshore, offshore, yeah. Mexico. They've, they have shale lands around the Matatlan property, of which they drilled some shale wells recently, you know, with significant success.
What is your current ownership position in the Amatitlan block? And can you increase this position? If so, to what?
We currently hold 25% of the current partner interest.
Yeah.
And we have negotiated options with Lukoil Etel to increase our interest to 62.5% of the current partner interest. Pemex will also take a working interest in the Matatlan property. And so we feel that we'll have somewhere between 40-45% of the Matatlan property, when the dust settles.
Craig, can you talk about your Q4 2018 results and the full year 2018 results?
Yes. All that production and associated revenue comes from the Chiapas blocks that we acquired in round 1.3 in 2015.
Yeah.
The fact that the production has barely declined since 2015 is a testament to the quality of the petroleum system in this Chiapas area. We have a four-well drilling program.
Yes.
As part of our commitment to the Mexican government, which we plan to employ, commence the operations in the fall of 2019. And you would see us drilling the four wells in early 2020.
I see.
But that should account for some significant increased production. These are very prolific wells.
Last year, you drilled 18 wells, which accounted for 11% of the wells drilled in Mexico. How were you able to be so productive?
Well, we drilled the 18 wells on the Matatlan property.
Yeah.
Of which 17 were drilled into a more shallow, tight sand formation called Chicontepec.
Yeah.
And the 18th well, which we drilled the fall of 2018, is called the Profeta, very, very important well. We drilled into the Upper Jurassic Shales, and there's three formations in these Upper Jurassic Shales of interest. The most shallow is the Pimienta that everybody talks about.
Yeah.
Just below that is the Taman, and below that is the Santiago. And we drilled the vertical leg of the Profeta well, and we cored it. And we took the cores to Houston, to Core Labs, which is the premier core lab in the world, and we had it analyzed. And it, the analysis has come back supportive of our original analysis, along with some pleasant surprises. So we're very, yeah, very delighted with the results of this Profeta well, and that's number 18.
Right. Craig, let's say you sell $1 billion worth of oil in the next 5 years. What's the revenue split between Renaissance Oil, Lukoil, and Pemex?
The Matatlan permit, the 60,000-acre service contract with Pemex currently.
Yeah.
Now, we've received board of director approval in June 2018 to migrate it into a more traditional license contract where each of the players would have a working interest.
I see. This is the CIEP.
Well, yeah, currently it's a CIEP or CIEP, which is a form of a service contract. And we've received board of director approval to migrate it to a license contract. And we're just going through that process now,
right,
to migrate it to a license contract. So exactly what our interest is going to be, post-migration, we don't know exactly, but, we expect that Renaissance will have a, very healthy working interest.
I see. Is that something you're working on with Lukoil?
With Lukoil and Pemex currently.
Sure. All three of you need to agree on a formula.
Yeah, we're just going through that process now.
I see. Do you have any timeline for when there might be hard news on that?
Yeah, I expect within the next 60 to 90 days, we should have some pretty solid concrete news on the migration to a license contract. You know, we believe we would have already migrated the contract by now, early June 2019, yeah. But with the new administration in place as of December 1st, 2018, there's been some delays, but we appear to have the migration on track, and we expect some good results in 60 to 90 days.
Great. What is the blue sky story for Renaissance Oil? Where do you see this company in 5 years?
Well, we believe that the new administration is realizing the importance of the international oil companies,
yep.
IOCs,
yep.
in helping them achieve their goals. And we're, you know, and that is to increase national oil production to 2.4 million barrels a day and strengthen Pemex, obviously, in the process.
Yes.
We feel that we can work well with Pemex. We've proven to Pemex that Renaissance is a, you know, is an active player and a real performer in Mexico by way of the wells that we've drilled and the associated costs. So we have proven ourselves to be a valuable partner to Pemex. So I believe, to answer your question, I believe that over the next 5 years, we will be able to work closely with Pemex to help achieve their goals,
yeah.
along with Renaissance developing into a major onshore player in Mexico, with the focus on the shales. The shales are, we have 60,000 acres currently gross in this shale play, which comprises about 800,000 acres.
Yeah.
So we expect not only to commence the development of the shales on Amadan land, but to acquire more shale lands in the sweet spot of this shale play and develop those as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Renaissance Oil has an unbelievably large upside for any investor who wanted to get in now.
Yes, I agree. And we're just getting started with Amadan land. And as you say, Amadan land has over 6 billion barrels of oil in place. We
yep.
believe it's reasonable to assume that we can recover 8 to 10% of those 6 billion barrels of oil. And so that's approximately a half a billion barrels. If Renaissance has, you know, 40% of that, you know, that represents billions of dollars worth of value to the shareholders. And then further lands that Renaissance may acquire, of course, just offers more upside.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
That concludes another episode of Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.